Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Sounds of Awareness. My name is Paul Van Dyke, and today we're talking with Mr. B.T. Kimbrough, who is the editor of a magazine called Dialogue. Dialogue is an excellent magazine. It is a magazine published by and for blind people. You have some excellent ideas for people who are visually impaired of all ages, they tell me. On their website, they have some highlights from the summer Dialogue magazine, which I just got in the mail and listened to most of it last night. It was incredibly good. We have Mr. Kimbrough on the line this morning, who's going to tell us not only about the magazine, but about an organization that publishes the magazine called Blind Skills Incorporated. They're located in Salem, Oregon. They disseminate a lot of information about blindness and about other issues. Excellent discussion stuff. Good morning, Mr. Kimbrough.
Paul, hello. Thanks very much for having me.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about Dialogue magazine because I remember some time back, I don't even want to tell you how many years ago this was, we were getting it, I believe, through the Library of Congress, as I recall. The thing that was so refreshing about it is that most of the magazines that you get on blindness or visual impairment usually come from one of the two consumer groups. And the consumer groups tend to put in a lot of information, of course, that's why you get it, about their particular programs and their particular things. But if you just wanted information and you didn't care who was elected as vice president of the Minnesota branch or whatever, Dialogue is free of that organizational stuff and just is very meaty and has a lot of good things in it. Can you tell us a little about the history of that magazine and how it got started?
Yes, sir. I'll be happy to do that. When you talk about not wanting to say how many years ago you were getting Dialogue, I've got that same problem, only mine relates to how many years ago I was first involved with it. Dialogue's going to be 50 years old soon. It dates back to 1961, and I didn't have anything to do with it then, but by 1972, 73, I was having my first involvement with it. Dialogue was founded by a fellow named Don O'Nold, who was blinded as an adult, and he lost touch with things. Blindness for him came on quite suddenly, and isolation became a factor to him. He felt like he was isolated away from the things he used to do and isolated away from the world as he understood it, as he knew it, isolated away from a lot of social contact. And he was interested in, he had an office supply business, but he was also interested in writing, and he wanted to try his hand at publishing, and the Lions of Illinois got together and funded Don to have the opportunity to start a magazine for the blind. I think it was a new concept then. And it caught on, and the Library of Congress, as you say, funded Dialogue. They don't do it anymore due to, it's just a policy decision that they don't buy copies of us now. But for a long time, they provided people with free copies of Dialogue. It was a quarterly magazine when it began. It's a quarterly magazine now. It was bi-monthly for a while, but it's hard to keep that going financially for a small not-for-profit. It's published in Braille and on audio cassette and in large print, and we have an email edition now. So it was published in Illinois from 1961 until Don Nold retired, a little bit before 1990, but in 1990, he called on Carol McCarl, who's been a lifelong Oregonian for 30 years. She actually wasn't born in Oregon, but she talks up Oregon to the point where you wouldn't know that she wasn't a lifelong Oregoner. And Carol was out here in Salem teaching for the Oregon School for the Blind, and she taught there for close to 30 years. And retired in the 90s. And unfortunately, the state legislature closed the school for the blind last year. That's another story. I won't get, don't get me started on
that.
Oh,
yes. As a matter of fact, we did an interview on that very subject, and that's
sore point. And they made the wrong decision, and sooner or later, I think they're going to have to revisit that choice and provide better for the education of blind K-12 students in the state of Oregon. But that's a program in and of itself. Carol was about ready to think about retirement in 1990 when she was asked to take over the publication of Dialogue, and she's been publishing it ever since. Carol had established the organization that sponsors Dialogue, Blind Skills, back in 1983, because she felt like it was a real stressful thing for blind students who were the only blind kid in the school. And a lot of blind kids go to public schools, and they're the only blind kid there. They don't have any peers to compare notes with. They don't have anybody to say, gee, I read about a page a minute of Braille. How fast do you read? I know what I want to be when I grow up. What do you want to be? What have blind people ever been? What's realistic for us? What could we do? They don't have any people to compare notes and talk to. Well, in some cases, when they're the only blind kid in school.
That's true. And, you know, Don, just on that point, Mr. Kimbrough, sorry about that. On that particular point, I also think that kids who are in public school without proper preparation, shall we say, sometimes sit on the sidelines during PE class. They're not supposed to, you know, play basketball. Absolutely. or do these other things that make life interesting when you're in school. The teachers, a lot of the time, are either not equipped or just simply don't have time to work one-on-one with blind students.
And or they won't take time, or they don't think they know how. There's all kinds of things that can get in the way.
Well, one of the things that we've talked about on this show before, too, is the fact that if you have a child in public school, a sighted child, that kid is learning to read from the time he is, you know, I mean, even before he goes to school. He sees the McDonald's and the Coca-Cola sign, and he sees the word milk on the milk carton. So he's familiar with these words. Blind kids don't have that information coming to them as readily, and so as a consequence, many of us started behind in reading and spelling, and there are a whole lot of issues connected with teaching them Braille and all that business.
Well, you said a mouthful there. I mean, if particularly if they're by themselves in a mainstream setting, they don't get challenged by other Braille readers, and they don't encounter very much Braille in their everyday environment. It's not put out there unless the teacher comes to them and hands it to them directly, but they don't sense other people using it. That's also true of large print. If a kid has got some vision, they're the only large print reader, and they tend to feel like there's something very special about that, and like they're not going to run into that stuff in their ordinary environment. So as a consequence, as you say, people who have limited sight are kind of behind the eight ball, or can be, when it comes to learning how to read when they're in school. Well, Carol McCarl thought that if some way could be found to make some contact for blind kids K-12 who were in school by themselves as the only blind kid in that setting, that it would be very stimulating for them, and they would get a lot of help, and they could give help to each other, and they could serve each other as role models and friends and companions from a distance, even if it was in the pages of a magazine.
Okay, I'm going to have you hold that thought right there. I need to tell people that you are listening to Sounds of Awareness on KBOO-FM in Portland. My name is Paul Van Dyke, and my guest is Mr. B.T. Kimbrough, who is with an organization called Blind Skills down in Salem, Oregon, and they publish a magazine that goes nationally and I think worldwide even Am I correct on the worldwide part?
It's true. We have a reader just called us the other day and wanted us to send him a subscription in Bangkok, Thailand. And we have readers in New Zealand and in Britain and Scotland and Australia and Canada, a bunch of them in Canada, eh?
And the magazine is called Dialogue. And we're talking about the beginnings of the magazine and why it was started. It doesn't have anything to do with any of the major consumer groups, and this kind of is actually one of the advantages in that magazine. So you were telling us that Carol, who founded the magazine, wanted to sort of unite blind students that were not maybe necessarily at a residential setting. So
that was the mid-80s, Paul. That was 1983, and she was a big admirer of Dialogue, which was still being published in Illinois. And she thought, why not a magazine that'll bring kids together who are only one of a kind in their public school? And so was born a magazine that she called Life Prints. And through Life Prints, she got people who were students and people who were role models, blind adults, and some of them pretty famous, to write articles to give kids an idea of what they could aspire to and how they could do it. George Shearing, the wonderful jazz pianist, and Ronnie Millsap, the country singer, and Mike May, the blind outdoorsman, all wrote articles for Life Prints, and a lot of students wrote articles for each other. And she published that from 1983, when she established Blind Skills, into the 90s. And they asked her to take over Dialogue, and for a while, she published Dialogue and Life Prints too, but she found out that one lifetime was not enough time to keep two magazines going, and she integrated all of the publishing energy behind those two into Dialogue. And now Dialogue is a magazine that we say serves blind and visually impaired people of all ages, and we work pretty hard to make that true.
You know, that's interesting. I named my first puppy. I named my first puppy George Shearing. He was the pianist. Oh, never mind. Okay.
Yes, I understand. That's another story, is it not?
Okay. Anyway, well, that is absolutely a fascinating thing. So when this was published in Illinois, and how did it become under Blind Skills?
The folks who were publishing Dialogue knew that their founder, Don O'Nold, was going to retire and was going to move out west to Arizona, and they felt like they just weren't in a position to find a successor. And Don knew Carol McCarl, and he suggested that they send all the materials to Carol and transfer all of the publishing accoutrements and equipment and moved the tradition from Illinois to Oregon. And so that's how Dialogue moved from Berwyn, Illinois, in the Chicago area to Salem. It wasn't an easy transfer. I wasn't around here at that time. I had been with Dialogue in the early 70s, and I did some other things in the 80s and 90s, and that's another story too. But Carol says many, many, many boxes were sent out here from Illinois in 1990 to Salem. And totally at their request, she took it over, and now it's all published out here in Salem.
That is absolutely an interesting story. And boy, moving across, in fact, you've even got an article in the summer issue that just came out, Moving, How to Pack Up and Relocate Without Going Mad.
That was one of our first-time writers, and one of the neat things about Dialogue is we often hear from writers from people who want to write, and they've got some experience that they want to share with other people, and they kill two birds with one stone. And that that young lady, Satana Howery, told an interesting story of how she figured out ways to label the boxes in Braille, both the ones she packed and the ones other people packed. And we've had a move several times, my wife and I, and I'm very fortunate because my wife is very organized, and she's real good at marking. She's so good at marking, she's a sighted person. She's so good at marking in ways that make sense to her that all I have to do when we get there is ask her where stuff is, and she knows. So I haven't had to label my boxes in Braille, but I'm telling you right now, I couldn't survive if I didn't label most of the contents in Braille. I have a little Dyna labeler in Braille, and I don't know how I would do without it. I really don't.
Well, my wife and I just moved from Vancouver, Washington, up north, a little bit north and west of Longview, Washington. And for those of you who are listening to this in some other part of the country or some other part of the world, if you look at a U.S. map, we're kind of midway between the Columbia River there. Washington is the state up in the upper left-hand corner of the map. And it starts at the bottom with the Columbia River. And then about midway up is, on the left side, is Seattle, and that area where Microsoft and those guys are. So we're kind of midway between the Columbia River and Seattle, just to kind of give you a huge kind of an area, an idea of what part of the country we're in. I can tell you from personal experience, just having moved not only my stuff, but all my wife's craft material and our musical instruments and several old antique Singer sewing machines. My wife is into crafting, and they made those things out of cast iron then, man. It wasn't this light plastic and aluminum stuff. Oh, I thought I was going to die. So moving is at the very least hard work.
It sounds like you're going to want to stay put for a while.
Oh, you know it. Yeah, so we have our little studio set up here in Riderwood, and I should do a program on Riderwood sometime. It makes me think about that. But getting back to you, Mr. Kimbrough, B.T. Kimbrough from Blind Skills and publisher of Dialogue Magazine, what sorts of things are talked about in that magazine? Because we get a lot of magazines in various formats and things, and what makes yours kind of stand out among all of the others?
Most everything in Dialogue is there because we know the reader has vision issues, but it isn't all directly related to blindness. We just give the blindness perspective. So, for instance, we have pieces on interesting careers and ways of changing careers, and we emphasize what kind of equipment a person might use if they're doing that career with little or no vision. We have articles that describe various kinds of recreation, either that have been specially adapted so you can do them if you're blind, or that people have figured out ways to do without any generalized help. And the person writing about it happens to have limited vision. We have a department called Living with Low Vision, and that one is usually dominated by people who've experienced vision loss as adults. We have a department called Here's How, and I think that's where the article on moving wound up. And Here's How explains how if you've been trying to figure out how to do something, here's how another blind person does it. We have something called Homefront, which is dominated by Our Lady in the Kitchen, Rhonda Del Baccio. And these are not recipes that are, I mean, they have nothing to do with blindness per se, but these are things that are simple to prepare, and Rhonda's a cook with limited vision, and she'll answer questions about how you measure small amounts of liquid with little or no vision, or how you handle an egg so it doesn't separate on you before you want to, in some cases there'll be a special appliance that she can recommend, or there'll be a special technique. Sometimes it just involves putting a big bowl underneath a little spoon, so if the liquid's going to get away, it doesn't go anywhere that's going to do any damage.
Well, you know, now you bring up an interesting point, because I'm living in an area here now that the town that I live in is a retirement community. It's a 55-plus community. And I hear people occasionally say, oh, well, Mrs. So-and-so that lives down the street from you is losing her vision. She doesn't cook anymore. Or Ed pays somebody to come and mow his grass because he can't see very well. And as a matter of fact, when I was in conversation with somebody the other day, I was commenting on the fact that we'd had some several days of very warm weather, and then the next day it was a lot cooler. And I said, I think I should have waited to cut my grass, to mow my lawn until today, because it's much nicer. And the guy goes, you mowed your lawn? I said, well, yes, of course I mowed my lawn. I mean, I'm a homeowner. I have to mow my grass. Well, you can see the grass then. I said, no, I can't. Well, how did you mow your lawn and with a power mower? And I said, well, you put gasoline in the mower and you pull that little string a couple times and choke the motor if you have to and get it started and go back and forth on your grass. Well, didn't it look like a bad haircut? I said, well, no, why would it? So I had to explain to him how to mow a yard if you can't see. But a lot of people don't realize when they're losing their vision as adults, how do you do these things? How do you, for example, if you want to cook eggs for breakfast, how do you flip that egg over with the little turner thing? How do you do that without burning yourself or catching your clothes on fire or something? People are just scared to death of that.
It's true. And people will make a whole profession as rehabilitation teachers or occupational therapists, now vision and rehabilitation therapists, to train people and show them how to do those things non-visually. And we had an interesting little description, speaking of lawn mowing, not too long ago. A guy uses a stepladder, and he'll put the stepladder down across the width of his property, and when he's done going along the stepladder, he'll move the stepladder and go along it again, and does row after row after row, and I guess winds up with a pretty neat-looking lawn. How do you do it?
Well, what I do, actually, and this is, I wasn't really going to get into this in this program, but
I'm sorry, maybe I asked Morris a question I shouldn't have asked.
Well, no,
I was just curious about your method.
Well, I'll tell you about my method, because I think it's worthwhile to know. I have a yard that is not totally symmetric. I have a flower bed along one edge. I've got my neighbor's property along the other edge. And I have a fence back there that tells me when I'm at the edge of the property so I don't go over into his yard or whatever. The fence doesn't separate our yards, but at the corner of the fence that fences off my backyard, I start from that corner. Actually, I go around my yard and I pull my lawnmower. I'll use my foot, for example, my right foot, to tell me where the edge of the flower beds are that sort of curve around. And I'll pull that power mower along behind me. And then when I get to the end, then I can turn around and go, you know, just that couple of feet to do that. And I'll make a border around my entire yard so that all I have in the middle is this big square of uncut grass. Then that part's easy, because then you just go back and forth and you move the I don't use a step ladder, because I think that would probably, for me, that would just take too long moving the ladder. But if you just move over a little bit each time, about half the width of the mower, and walk back, you can pull it or push it, because it's one of those mowers with the blade that looks like a fan blade underneath, and it cuts pretty neatly. Oh, I think I probably scared my poor neighbor across the street, because he saw me out there, a blind guy with a power mower. Oh, my God, yeah. It's going to be blood, you know.
Well, we've had such interesting features as a blind guy decided that he wanted to keep his hands out of the bag of chips and the bag of cookies, so he taught himself to knit. And he couldn't find instructions that were useful to him as a blind guy, so he wrote some. And the folks at Lion Brand Yarn were part of the user group that he was asking for tips and help as he was teaching himself to knit, and they got interested in the book, and they posted it on their website.
Oh, no kidding.
So, yeah, the guy's name is Davey Hultz. He runs a Braille translation business in town here. And so he's just down the street from us, but I didn't find out he was there until I happened to read an article about what he had done in the newspaper. So I did an interview with him, and we had that feature in the last issue of Dialogue.
That's incredible. B.T. Kimbrough is our guest this morning as we run up against the clock here. B.T. Kimbrough is with an organization called Blind Skills. They publish a magazine called Dialogue, and it is an absolute, there's a minimal charge for it, just like there is for print magazines. So it's not a freebie, but let me tell you what, it's really worth it. And let me just sort of sum up here. They've got a section in there and what's new and where to get it. And they've got an article in the summer issue about building your network if you're looking for work and what kind of things you should know about when you're deciding what college to go to if you're a young person. It's fabulous. It is fabulous. And we're going to print the contact information on our website. Mr. Kimbrough, I would love it if this were an hour-long show, but it's not, unfortunately.
Well, it's good of you to share your half hour with us, Paul. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Now, if people are interested, I'm going to give out your 800 number, but I'm also going to put this information up on our website so that people will know. Let me see. What did I do with the 800 number? Maybe you better tell me.
Well, I can help you with that. The 800 number is, this works even in our hometown of Salem, and it works all over the country and in Canada, and it's 800-860-4224. 800-860-4224. And our webpage is blindskills.com. We're a not-for-profit, and if I had it to do over, I didn't establish the title for our domain for our webpage, but we should be blindskills.org because we're definitely not-for-profit. However, our webpage is at blindskills.com.
I had a piano tuning business once that was non-for-profit. It wasn't intended that way, but that's the way it turned out. Anyway,
that's another story.
Mr. Kimbrough, thank you so much for being our guest this morning on Sounds of Awareness.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
This has been Sounds of Awareness. For more information about our program and guests, please visit kboo.fm/soundsofawareness. Our screen reader-friendly website is publicradio113.weebly.com. There you can find downloads of previous shows, contact information, and editorials on various disability-related topics. Sounds of Awareness is independently produced by Paul and April Van Dyke for KBOO-FM, Portland, Oregon, USA. Thank you for listening, everyone.